Leicester looking to get courtside of Font. Lafondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Empire Rules podcast, sponsored by Blue Collar Street Food. I'm Alex, hosting a birthday party defeat for Reading today. Coventry City came down to Reading yesterday and took away all 3 points, giving Reading their eighth defeat in a row. To join me talking about on the field and off the field yesterday, Matt Lansley. Matt, how are you doing this morning?
Getting used to this losing podcast at the moment. It's, yeah, just seems relentless at the moment, but as good as I could be after a 150th birthday defeat, I think.
And alongside Matt, I've also been joined by Mika yesterday. You hosted a Twitter Spaces. Seemed to go down relatively well. Got some good opinions on there.
Yeah, it was really good to see. I think, like we were saying beforehand, it's pretty much a coping method for most of us now, that going in there in the evenings, whether it's to Benji or to myself, it just seems that we're all in the same boat and we're all just frustrated now.
Yeah, it's a nice little group therapy session, it seems, every week at the minute for everybody. And he's not even charging for it, which is really nice of him and, you know, of you as well. That was good of you all. So yesterday, Matt, was the 150th birthday party anniversary. I'm not quite sure what we'll call a birthday party, just to be consistent. So the club had laid on things outside the ground, which we'll come on to, but obviously I feel like the starting point is probably the pre-match protest yesterday. I mean, just give us your thoughts. I think all three of us were there, actually. Just give us your thoughts as to what it was like and what you think might come from it or might come in the future.
Yeah, well, it was obviously, it's a starting point, I think, because I think so many fans are just getting to the end of the tether. You saw that in the game as well. We'll get onto it later. But, you know, everyone can pretty much see where the club's going right now, apart from seemingly the owners and the CEO, who are the two most important people. You know, we're watching this week in, week out. The owner supposedly watches this tripe week in, week out. I cannot see how he does if he's watching this. And like just seeing what's happening week on week, because it's inconceivable that he can be watching this 8 wins on the bounce and not have done anything with Paulo. And
just
we don't,
to correct you, eight losses on the bounce.
Yeah. 8 losses. Sorry, what did I say?
But you're becoming delusional.
my brain is just almost as bad as Reading FC at the moment. That's saying something. but yeah, you know, and they put out that statement in the week as well, which wasn't from the owners. It wasn't from the CEO. You could read through it. I mean, EFL on Quest, even they said that you know, this isn't coming from the owners. This is so wishy. What I think they said wishy-washy. You know, everyone can see through it. And like, do I feel sorry for the communications team for having to put that out? Yeah, I do a little bit, because they're being forced to do that by the owner and the CEO, who are too scared, I don't know, to put out a statement to the fans. But right now, what you need is something from them, something genuine, something truthful, because otherwise right now we're just a rudderless ship going head first into League One. Like, and it's not changing. Like, I've never known like a successful company, business, football team that has been in a crisis like this, and the owners, the CEOs, etc., to just sit back and just do nothing, not say anything, not give any guidance, not give any structured dialogue or anything to their fans. And that's the problem. That's the real problem. You know, if we were doing better, you know, they might be able to take a bit more of a backseat, because that actually shows that they're doing something right. But quite frankly, in their tenure that they've been here, they have done very, very little right, apart from one odd season last year under Paunovic, you know, and it was very odd. You know, we pretty much survived on a first 8-9 game winning run. And yeah, it's starting to boil up. Hopefully it's the start of something. But yeah, it was good to be there. I know people have their different opinions on it, whether it was successful, what it would lead to. But you never know where protests will lead, but you've got to do something. Something is better than nothing.
I think yesterday was the beginning of kind of something for the club. On a positive note, I guess, in circumstances, having a protest, whether it was just 50 people or whatever, however many were there, I think it needs to be the starting point for more consistent protests. Whether the next one is to do the exact same or to do something else, I don't know. That needs to be discussed. But I think yesterday was a really good starting point for the club as a whole, because I don't think the owners would care, to be honest, for a while. I think it would take something a lot bigger than 50 of us outside of the Megastore to make a change. But if we start doing these little things more consistently, they'll see the frustration, they'll go, right, something must be wrong, even if they've not noticed that already.
Yeah, I think you're right. Everything kind of starts from somewhere, and ultimately it's the same as a podcast, a company, whatever. Nothing starts with massive success. My guess is there was probably, I'd guess, around 250 to 300 people there yesterday. If you turned up, great. If you didn't and you thought it was embarrassing, then fair enough. It's kind of your opinion. Let's move on, though, Matt, to, I guess, the club's plans and celebration yesterday. It all felt a little bit like a damp squib, really, didn't it? I mean,
it just seemed like a non-event.
Birthday, yeah.
Yeah.
There was so much missing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, to be fair, at the protest, obviously, we saw a few, you know, club legends from years back, and you know, Medeski as well. But there was nothing that actually portrayed during, once you were in the stadium, that this was a celebration of 150 years. They were building it up for this grand, you know, this grand celebration. And all we seemingly got, and I don't even think they announced it, was the fact that Kingsley got fucking Queensley up the duff, seemingly, whilst he was away. And that was pretty much it. You know, like, we had some bumper cars and fairground rides outside, which, again, really wasn't the best of timing to put that. Having a fairground and circus rides there with what's going on at the club at the moment, I mean, how out of touch can you be? But there was just nothing. It was almost the saddest attempt of a celebration of your history I think I've ever seen. But this isn't just a single time we've seen this. We, like, over the years, we've always seen the 106 team neglected, not celebrated. McDermott team neglected, not celebrated. Even stuff like the Simmond Cup and stuff, you know, these are our, you know, successes as a club. And the actual hierarchy, the team that works out the events and the planning committees and that, seemingly just don't seem to care. And like, I think we've heard it before. I think it was Kitson when he did his BBC Berkshire podcast those a couple of years back, didn't he, when he said about the fact that, you know, he felt that, you know, that the club just doesn't care about, you know, the 106 teams, or something along those lines. I can't remember the exact quote. And it's just so sad to see, because you would have thought in a 150th birthday party, celebration, whatever they wanted to call it, they would have at least tried to get players out onto the pitch. I remember when we went to QPR a few weeks back, they had Anton Ferdinand out on the pitch, and that was, I mean, they apparently do that every week,
Coventry have a Legends Day every year.
Yeah, exactly.
It shouldn't be a one-off that we should see successful players from past eras coming to the football club. They should be celebrated at the football club. Successful players, successful managers who've been at the club during good times should be being celebrated by the football club themselves. And it shouldn't need a big event like 150th celebration for them to be invited back. But seemingly none of them were, Mika. Or very few at least, right?
Yeah. And that, I mean, we've got the thing in May, haven't we? The 2012 v 2006. But again, if they're asking them to come to the Majeski for that, there should have been no issue with getting the whole 106, whole 2011-12 team out onto the pitch yesterday. No matter what would have happened yesterday, the mood in that stadium would have been 100 times higher if they'd have just brought them out, or just brought someone from the past out who's got a bit of stature at the club.
Yeah, I mean, if you There's so many players out there who could have come yesterday. Where's Stephen Hunt? Where's Noel Hunt? Where's Brian McDermott? Where's Steve Coppell? Like, these are, like, you know, they're key people in the last 15 or 20 years. That's only in the last 15 or 20 years. We've been a club for 150 years, and there wasn't even a mention of Elm Park yesterday. Like, I don't understand what's going on. Where's the planning? Where's the celebration of history?
There wasn't even a mention of John Madejski yesterday, apart from the pre-match protest when he walked by, and obviously got you know, a unanimous reception from everyone. Like, but someone like him, he's not going to say no to going on the pitch and just applauding the fans and stuff. Why didn't you even just do that? Just do something. It was like I say, it was just the most pitiful attempt of a celebration of a history of a football club I've ever seen. You know, the EFL on Quest did more of a tribute to past players and the history of Reading FC in their 2-minute segment they did than the club. And that says it all, in my opinion, with where the club is at the moment and how they're running it and, yeah, everything surrounding it, really.
We won't go much further into the detail around the 150th because I don't really feel like there is much more to discuss about it, unfortunately. It's ultimately really disappointing effort, to be honest. I think from how much hype was built up around it, it failed to deliver completely. And I'm just talking off the field here without even discussing the actual on the pitch issues. Off the field yesterday was just hugely disappointing from the club. And that's kind of my thoughts on the matter. Obviously off the field, off the field, Mika, the end of the game saw a pitch invasion, people on the pitch. I'm not quite sure what to call it. But there was around, I would guess, maybe 40, 50 people pitch invaded from Y26, Y25. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I didn't know anything. Apparently, there were rumours of it happening before the game. I got told that by a steward that I know, but I didn't know anything about it. So I wasn't shocked to see it, but I was also kind of it didn't surprise me as much as it could have. I haven't really had a proper opinion on it because I see both sides of it. I think if we're going to make a point of how badly the club is run, doing the worst thing possible, which is effectively pitch invading and causing a scene, that's going to wake up to somebody up top, whether that's the owners or manager or whatever. But I don't really know what was said to the players. Carl Hein apparently went off the pitch visibly upset. I saw Yeardon was confronted again. Whether that was positive or negative, I don't know. I wouldn't put that blame on anyone. It might have been a friendly talk, but it's one of the ones where I can see why they did it. I just don't think there was much kind of incentive behind it other than just get on the pitch. Like, if they'd made a point and had a banner saying so-and-so out and then sat on the halfway line, okay, we're getting somewhere with what you want to happen. But they just ran on and then did nothing. It just didn't really, for me, seem like there was a motive behind it. And I feel like from there, we'd have to kind of see where that's going to go, because I think we had a pretty clear message outside the ground with the protest. Obviously, there were plenty of banners, chants and all of that. And there wasn't that on the pitch. And I'm not saying to not go on the pitch, but I'm not saying to go on it. I just think there needs to be a motive behind it, which we didn't see yesterday. And it just kind of, for me, it embarrassed me a little bit. So it just went, like, what is this? Like, 40 people running on the pitch. There's more stewards on the pitch trying to get them off. So,
Matt, I mean, you're not in the East Stand. So don't think anybody was, you know, clambering over the advertising hoarding from in front of you. But can you kind of understand why people are on the field at the end of the game?
I can 100% understand it, because it's frustration. It's and that's what Reading FC, supporting Reading FC, is turning into right now. It's just pure out and out frustration. Frustration at the players, frustration at the management team, frustration at the board, frustration at the club from top to bottom. It stinks from top to bottom. And you know, they I don't know the people that ran on the pitch, but you know, like I can completely understand why they did, because they're getting to the end of their tethers, just like we are when we talk about the protest beforehand. They've just obviously done it in a slightly different way. Could it have been more structured or had more of a meaning to it? Possibly, but you know, it's probably the first time they've tried protesting like that. Like it's the first time we've tried protesting outside the stadium. You know, so everything's got to start somewhere. You know, yes, it might not have been the most, you know, gainly of looking protests or points to make, but like the fact that some fans are, you know, earmarking it as just delusional. And I mean, I saw a few videos like earmarking it as just pointless, pathetic, and you know, he's not going to get anywhere, etc. But it's like,
it has to be the start though, doesn't it?
That's exactly something. Exactly, I think that.
Yeah, ultimately, my thoughts on it. If you did go on the field, if you wanted to go on the field yesterday, I'm kind of with you two. I can completely understand why people wanted to and why people did. People are at the end of their tether, and the anger is just snapped for people. You know, and whether that is a case of you're now not going to go to games because that's where your anger takes you, whether that's a case of you're going to protest outside beforehand because that's where your anger takes you, or whether you're going to run on the field at the end of games and that's where your anger takes you. It, all of them ultimately are a result of fans being angry and frustrated at the club and the club not listening to fans. And whatever your kind of like action is of taking the, you know, a stance against the club in some way, It's all legitimate, and I completely understand why anybody would want to go on the field at the minute, because it's a case of, you know, how else, like, how do you expect to get the club to listen to you? If they're not going to listen by people not turning up, then, you know, fans are going to have to do something to basically make their point.
I think as well that just the fact that, or the worst things that fans can do right now is almost just turn on each other on the ways they want to voice their opinions, because that anger should be pointed at the club, not at fans that are wanting to try and get change right now, because change is what we desperately need right now. And turning on each other, calling certain, you know, movements and stuff embarrassing, you know, not worthy, trying to play an I'm better than you card, you know, that is just not going to help any situation. You know, like what is required right now is almost just unity between the fans on the one common goal, which is how crap this owner has been and his staff that he's employing. You know, some people will say that, you know, he's just listened to people. That's bollocks. He's appointing these people. We're not going to go into it, obviously, in detail, but like, you know, the anger can't be at each other in the fan base. The anger has got to be on that one common goal, which is just how poorly the club has been run right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I was outside the ground yesterday and I heard people saying things about Pownau, about the owners and stuff. And I saw someone confront another person, and then I tried to calm the situation down, but it's just people are frustrated at the game, frustrated at the club. And then obviously when we're in the former inn, people are just getting from here to here to here, just getting so riled at it that we're just that people are taking it out on each other. And I don't think, like you said, Matt, I don't think that's the way to do it. We need to, people calling the protest tragic on Twitter or whatever it's been, like, it's pointless, because they're the same people that want the same goal but are doing nothing about it. We've got, like, with the pitch invasion, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm not saying it's wrong either. I completely see why they went on. I completely see why people protested outside it. Megastore, I just think, like you said, we need to come as one, as not only just EPR, 1871, Star, whoever.
It has to be a whole fan base. It's not supporters, exactly. Groups. It's not us. It's not 1871. It's not Star. It's not Tireless. And it's Reading FC fans.
Exactly. That's what it is.
Reading FC fans want change, and however that is going to come about, it's going to be done as a whole. It's not going to be, you know, one group here or there. We'll move on, but I think there's going to be more protests going forwards. I think there's going to be more. I think fans, because fans' frustrations at the minute, seemingly, we're at what, 11:09 on Sunday morning, and Hanovic is still in a job, so I can't see how there won't be more more protests going forward. But let's move on to the actually on the field yesterday. The lineup yesterday, Matt, it was the same as Tuesday night, except for John Swift came back into the team. Probably the right decision to bring him back into the fold.
Yeah. Well, he came on, did quite well against Bristol City. Actually, looked like he actually cared something, which sadly then didn't materialise yesterday, seemingly. But yeah, you know, the team news was pretty much as expected. Probably the biggest boost was seeing Mate back. You know, the fact he's been able to get over an ACL injury and back to playing this quickly. You know, everyone knows how catastrophic ACLs and MCL injuries can be. You know, we saw how long Obita was out for, you know, 18, 20 months, and he was never the same player when he came back, after it. You know, the fact he's been able to get back and get back into fitness, back into the team this quickly, I just think it's a credit to Yaku, and just his work ethic and just love for the game, really.
May I add, he's probably the best player we had yesterday in that 25 minutes he was on. He was the first, it was the first time in months, if not years, that I've seen a drive to go forward. His pace down that right wing for the cross that Ince put over, I mean, we haven't seen that in months. I can't remember the last person who skinned someone like that.
It's probably the first time all season that we've seen anybody do that in reality. Yaku Mate did play the last 20 minutes or so. The first half, Mika, I actually think Reading, again, it was similar to the Bristol City game. They weren't bad in the first half up until injury time, and then they let themselves down again.
Yeah, it's that fear. I think we've got a fear of between the 40th and the 50th minute. I'd like to know how many we concede. It's probably not as many as you think, but that 40th to 50th minute, I mean, every single time we just seem to capitulate. It's like, whether it's we're 1-0 up and we're going into half time, we'll be all right, and then coming out and having 5 minutes to warm up again. I don't know, but it just seems that we lose something in them 10 minutes either side of half time.
And Matt, Lucas Joao got his, I want to say, it wasn't his first goal of the season. I think it's his second goal of the season, isn't it, yesterday? And,
yeah, it's probably his Huddersfield.
It's a difficult one because Lucas Joao's goal yesterday is a reasonably good header from a Julio Hoyle cross. And I want to sit and praise Joao for scoring yesterday, but what did you make of Joao's performance overall?
It's very much like Joao, I think, has been so far. Like, he's not quite been the same player he was last season. He's I don't know whether or not he's just not up to speed yet. Makes some nice plays on the ball, sometimes links the play up quite well, which is something obviously we don't have anyway with Joao not in the team, which is a plus. But he's just not quite, he's not getting on the ball as much. The ball isn't coming into him as much, though, as well. We don't seem to be playing the same style of football that we were last year, which was very much playing into the feet of Joao, playing out wide, etc. from there. It seems to be a different style that we're playing, and it's almost seemingly to the detriment of Joao. We're not fully utilising him, I don't feel. There's a lot of long balls going up, which, for a big guy, Joao isn't the best in the air, winning knock-ons and stuff. Like, so We've just not seen quite what I think what many were expecting from Joao at this point. But I mean, saying that, he's got two goals in how many games he's got now? I think five for the eight. Season. Oh, is it eight? Is it that many?
Yeah, he played a few at the start of the season as well.
Oh, of course.
I wasn't overly impressed with Lucas Joao yesterday. Again, it just feels like he's just not really involved. And when he is involved, it just feels like not that the game passes him by, but often the ball just bounces 2 yards away from him
way.
A lot of time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like things are really going his way at the minute. And despite that, we were 1-0 up. And I do think we probably, on the balance of play, were the better team
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
40 minutes or so. And then 47th minute, obviously it had to be an ex-Reading player who scored here, Mika. Dominic Hyam getting his goal as captain for Coventry against his old, you know,
on the 150th anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. The irony just is so obvious. And again, it's come from second phase from a corner. And I mean, just talk us through the goal.
I mean, I said I called it literally to my mate before. I went, we'll concede from this corner because that 45th minute corner we've always had. I found it quite ironic in the fact that Paunovic researched them stats of we've only actually conceded 2% of corners or set pieces or whatever. And then we go and do it again yesterday. And it just seemed, for me, I think, I can't remember if we conceded a set piece at Bristol City. A corner as well, I think. We might have. I can't remember. But it just, for me, set pieces this year from the first day of the season have been a real issue for us. And yesterday, again, was no difference. As soon as we get it clear, no one's following up on Hyam. He had ages to shoot. Absolutely ages. And then, I mean, deflections
It wasn't actually Hyam that had the shot. It was Hamer.
Hyam's touched it in. Yeah.
Somebody should shut him down.
There was an interesting stat because it was interesting, obviously, you say about Paunovic and the percentage stat he seemingly brought out, but we've still conceded the most goals this year from set plays.
Yeah.
And that was extended yesterday. I think we're now, I think it's 15, the closest to us, I think, is Hull on 13. You know, 15 goals from set plays. 15. Like, what's it? We conceded 60 in total.
That's one in every two matches.
It's
not a good record. Not a good record at all.
Which Pano can pull out stats from left, right, and centre, but when you put it like that, you know, conceding a goal from a set play every other match is just shocking. Whatever way Pano tries to spin it,
it's this zonal marking that I think he's kind of ditched it a bit now. But we had a real phase of zonal marking where he was. It just felt like every other goal we conceded was through set pieces. I think it was Bristol City at home, and then we had someone else at home a week before, and it was like every goal was a set piece, and it's
boring.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah.
I mean, talking of set pieces, it felt like you could probably almost write this before it happened, because the 47th minute Coventry got a corner, and inevitably a player runs free from the edge of the box through past three different Reading players and scores his first goal with a really very simple unmarked header, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, as we've alluded to with how dreadful we are on set plays, I think this is one of the worst defended set plays you are likely to ever see. It is so infuriating to rewatch. It was bad enough at the time because, again, like Mika said, I said to someone at the same, and you know we're going to concede. Like after we conceded to go 1-1, you knew at half time we were going to concede again between 45, 50 minutes. I said to my mate Mark there, I said that within the first 5 minutes, you know we're going to be 2-1 down, and you know we're going to capitulate from there. And what happens? We concede a corner, and like you say, number four, he just has a complete free run in, free header. They're like the blockers are at the edge of the box. They don't even try to stop the run. No one even then tries to take the initiative. You know, I think it's Lauren and Morrison who are the front two players of like the zonal marking players. Neither of them try to actually make a run to get to the ball. Everyone literally stands still, and that includes Swift, who has stood on the back post, who is meant to then head that ball away.
It's pointless being there, John Swift. It's pointless you being there if you're not even going to try and block the ball. Sorry, but like you might as well just not.
It's utterly
stand
pathetic.
There.
Just off the top of your heads, do either of you remember the last time we counterattacked from a corner? Because I don't.
Well, because everyone's back for a corner.
Yeah,
exactly.
This has been brought up quite a lot in recent weeks on social media about the fact that we play with 11 men back, and we don't. But then the funny thing is, of course, is that when we attack corners, we leave two or three men to defend because other teams do put a man forwards. So we end up with a situation where we're defending with 11, but we only attack with seven or
six. Constantly defending. And it's not the first time, like say, it's been brought up, because there was a game a couple of weeks back, wasn't it, where we conceded from a counter, from a corner. Was it the Huddersfield? No, it wasn't the Huddersfield game. It was one of the games.
Bristol City, we conceded from our own corner.
Yeah. That was it. Oh my god. But yeah, and it's when you rewatch it and when you depict it, actually I really wouldn't recommend anyone to rewatch it, because you'll just get as frustrated and angry as I am about it. It's not worth it, honestly. It is just the most pathetic, diabolical excuse of a corner of a defending corner routine I think I've ever seen. It's just utterly, utterly pathetic. But it's this team all over. It's this Reading team all over that corner.
Yes, you're probably right, unfortunately. The game wasn't completely dead, though, at 2-1. We did actually get back into it. Yeardom got an equaliser about 5 or 6 minutes after they scored. And we scored from a corner, Matt. Tom Ince with an in-swing corner, and Yeardom kind of getting a relatively free header and nodding home.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that free, to be fair. Like, I mean, I think Coventry actually do much more of a job trying to actually mark the players that are running in from Reading than I think I've ever seen Reading try themselves. But yeah, it's just a pretty standard corner. Of all the players I think in there, I wouldn't have picked Yeardom to be the one nodding home. It was quite a looping corner from Tom Ince. It's quite an odd one when you rewatch it. But it just falls on Yeardom almost perfectly. And again, I don't know what their player's doing on the line, because it pretty much just hits him. I don't know if he tries to handle it or something.
It looks like it bounces off his arm, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it looks like he's wanting to knock it away with his arm, but he's remembering that then, yeah, that'd be a red card. And it just kind of just bobbles into the net from there. But yeah,
it felt like we were back in the game, though.
It did, yeah, because again, like, I mean, as much as it frustrates me to say this, we were playing okay yesterday. And I guess when you get a result, it doesn't really matter. But that's the whole point of Reading FC right now. It doesn't really matter actually how we're playing, because we're losing every single time. And it doesn't matter how we actually go about getting a result. We just need to get a result. And we simply can't do that. And it's epitomised by obviously what Junior then goes on to do in the subsequent goal and capitulation.
So yeah, make it the red card from Junior Hoyler. It's our first red card of the season, which I found a little surprising.
I think it's the first red card as well under Paunovic.
Yeah, I believe
that's very surprising.
It surprised me a little bit that we haven't had any red cards yet this season. You know, frustrations you would have thought might have boiled over at some point, but apparently not. Both of his yellow cards were not good tackles. I don't think anybody could argue against either of them.
Well, that's it. I mean, I didn't even see the first one. I saw the booking, but I didn't see it. And then, it's one of the things that we're so predictable at the moment. You see him running back, you see where it's going. And it, for me, it's just the most silly, needless, stupid challenge when you know you're on a yellow to then go and probably, I'm guessing it's probably worse than the first, because it's an awful tackle.
It was probably a little later. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just seemed very silly and needless. Like, that ruined, I think we'd have got something out of that game. That's me being very, very optimistic. Had we have had 11 men, we looked the better team on the whole up until that red card. And then obviously what happened after that, we don't even need to go down. But
inevitably, once we go down to 10 men, the first thing that we said as our group where we were stood was, well, we're just going to try and defend now for a point. There's absolutely no way that we're going to be able to go on and win this game. And within 2 minutes, it was 3-2 Coventry.
And to be fair, it's
another goal, Mika, which is just encapsulates Reading's kind of like season. Yeah. It's not defended particularly well. And then there's an element of bad luck in it as well.
It's the way they actually got the ball as well, because they got the ball in midfield through an errant pass, I think it was by Holmes, that just bounced off Laurent, but yeah.
That's it. I mean, it's one of them, I've been saying it all season again, it's the one of them where you go, that is the type of goal that we've just not had the luck with. Like, I'm not saying we should have got in that position in the first place, but the massive deflection, I mean, the whole of the stadium went "Ree!" when he blocks it, and then it just dips in. Like, it just sums up this entire season. And that's the thing that worries me with someone like Derby. That wouldn't happen to them this year. It hasn't. There's been so many times where they've had that odd deflection here or there for them. We haven't had that this year. And that's, for me, the type of things that is going to go, right, we could genuinely go down now.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things where it only ever happens to you when you've got bad luck running through you. And it's frustrating because, again, as Matt said, it comes around from a fairly poor errant pass from Tom Holmes at the back, and we've lost the ball 25 yards from our own goal.
And 5 seconds later, they score.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're 3-2 up, and we're down to 10 men, and we're chasing the game. As we discussed, Yaki Mate did come back, made his first appearance of the season. And let's be perfectly honest, and I'd be very surprised if anybody listening disagrees, the only way that Reading are staying up this season is if Yaki Mate basically plays every game and is our best player.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He, again, he was our best player by country mile last night. I mean, he'd probably been the best player we've had in 2022. That 20 minutes was something, like I said earlier, that it's just something we haven't had this season. We haven't had pace down the wings. We haven't had a drive going forward. We've had a very, very slow attacking kind of mentality, in my opinion. I don't think we attack with any speed or any urgency, even when we're losing. It just seems to be, oh, we'll stroll up the pitch, and then if we get in the box, we may shoot. If not, we'll pass it back. But yesterday, Mete down that right wing just lit up the last 20 minutes. And to be fair, we looked like we could have got a point even with 10 men after that.
Yep, Reading definitely went for it in that last 20 minutes. And Matt, the one obvious golden chance was for Tom Ince after a fantastic, you know, fantastic move by Mate to get into the position.
Yeah, how Ince then misses that, I really don't know. I think someone said it bobbled up and hits a shin, but
I watched the replay on the screen afterwards, and I thought, oh, the defender must be quite close to him to have put him off or something like that.
He wasn't.
Watched the replay, and it was just like, oh, Ince has just completely skied it, and it was.
It's, yeah, and it's goals or moments like that that like Mika has said, you know, with the deflected goal, when chances like that aren't going for you, you know, what is going to go for you? You know, right now, like, you can't see us buying a win right now. It's because of moments like that, because, you know, in those crucial moments, it's just not happening for one reason or another. It's just not happening, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was a sensational run from Yaku down the side. And like we said, it's one of the first times we've seen it.
And he did it a couple of times. I know we didn't always get a chance from him, but he did do it a couple of times where he just put the ball past his player and ran straight past him. I just can't believe that. I mean, I can believe it, but it's just so strange to think that that's the first time we've really seen anybody do that this season.
Yeah. Well, I guess, to be fair, he's the only player that can really do that within the team, isn't he? Like, that has pace, that has power, that has strength, you know, like, and it's weird that he's seemingly come back in such good condition as well, because usually after being out for so long, again, it's credit to Mate and the work he's obviously put in over the last few months. I mean, because he looks, you know, fitter, better, stronger. I mean, physically, you look at him and he looks even bigger than he was before. And he was not small before, you know. So let's just hope, pray that he stays fit for the rest of the season and can continue doing this. Because you'd almost, well, you'd say Wednesday night, he's straight into the starting 11, wouldn't you say? I think.
No, I agree. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be starting ahead of, well, I don't know who exactly, but he needs to start Wednesday. He needs to play the 90. He's, like you said, he's arguably going to be the man who keeps us up if we're going to stay up. I don't see it coming from Hoylett. I'm not saying Hoylett's a bad player. All I'm saying is Højlund hasn't got that drive that we've needed, but hopefully...
Mate is a game changer, right? Mate is a game changer, and Højlund and Ince and Delibashir and whoever else you want to list off, they're not going to change a game. Mate, a piece of talent or a piece of skill.
They're luxury players, you know, those kinds of players, and will often look good in good teams. But someone like Mate has the ability to, like, say, drive on in a game, change a game, switch that switch, and, you know, just put the afterburners on. We just don't have that in any of those other players.
And then I know we only saw, what, 7 or 8 minutes of Kelvin Abrifa when he came on, but just a quick thought, Mika, what did you think of Abrifa when he came on?
Abrifa, again, probably one of our better players yesterday for that short time he was on. I saw him play in the under-18s against Man United in the FA Cup, and I said that night to my mate Reece, I went, he's got something about him that, for me, had that kind of, not in the same way, but that Elise feel to him, like the skill, the ability, and for his age, seems way, way above where he is at, where he's already at even. Like, there was a bit when he was down in the right wing, down by corner of Easton Eamon Dolan, and I don't know how he got out of it. Like, he did something and he got out of it, and I don't call him misplacing anything. I think he's got something about him. I think give it a year or two, he'll either be out of the club, because that seems what we do with all good players, or he'll be in that starting 11. I don't see anything else really.
Do we know what position he actually is? Because I don't know much about him. I was pretty much.
I'm inclined to believe he's like a right wing back, so it's right mid.
I was under the impression he was a right wing back, but he seemed to come on at right midfield yesterday when he came on.
Yeah, I got the right wing back from the academy game. That's what I took it as.
Hopefully, we'll see a little bit more of him going forwards. You know, if he's going to be able to come on and put on those like cameo performances at the end of games, that would be handy potentially. Looking ahead, it is a very, very big midweek game for Reading this week, and everybody is already aware of how big it is. I probably don't need to repeat it that many times, but Peterborough United away on Wednesday, Matt, on Sky, in, let's be perfectly honest here, what is probably a relegation playoff game, because the loser of this game is not going. They're not doomed, but let's put it what it. Let's say how it is. The loser of this game is in the relegation zone, and they're going to find it very difficult to get out of.
Yeah, summed it up quite well there, I think. It can't be underestimated how big this game is for both teams. Both teams are, quite frankly, hopeless. You know, why Sky have decided to choose this as a game, probably just to make everyone in the country laugh at how awful we both are. I don't even want to think of what it will be like if we lose, to be honest, or even if we draw, because even if we draw, it does nothing for us. Because if we draw, Peterborough, I don't know who their game in hand is against, but they can still jump over us. And then you've also got Derby behind. You know, yes, we've still got a game in hand on Derby, but again, are we going to win ever? Like, and make that game in hand an advantage? Like, it's anything. Anything other than a win is just going to be almost just compiling relegation, I think. And it's crazy that we're talking about that this in mid-February. But, like, what ounce of hope have we got? People keep saying, oh, we've got a team good enough to not go down. We've said that for years and we've still been struggling down the bottom. You know, it's like, how many years have we said that? And... yeah, if we don't win, sadly, I'm losing all hope, to be honest. I can't even really, I can't see us winning a game right now. So I don't really know how playing, yes, Peterborough are dog awful as well, but I really can't see how, you know, we can even get a win against Peterborough. I really, really hope that I am sorely wrong and mistaken, but it's just the hope is gone with me with this club at the moment.
No, Mika, I'm sure you'll be there on Wednesday as well.
So. Yeah, I'll be there on Wednesday, and I mean,
we can cry on each other's shoulders.
Yeah, I'll see you there, Matt. It's one of them ones, but I've been saying it all week. It's going to be a 12-pointer, let alone six. It's such a big game, not only just for this season, but I think for the club as a whole. Like, if we go down to League One, I don't ever see us getting out of it. You have to look at Bolton, Sunderland, Ipswich, Portsmouth. They're all struggling to get out. That's a very good league for League One. It's a really, really good league, and I don't think our current team would be sitting in the top half of that this year. Like, we've been poor from start to finish, and if Peterborough do win, I seriously fear for this club. Like, and that's not even just talking about this season; it's the whole thing.
We won't go too much into it because I know how many times that people have discussed this. If we go down, we are beyond screwed. But I do agree with you, Mika, for certain. Wednesday is, absolutely massive. There's no doubt about it. I implore anybody who has just even a little bit of a curiosity or a little bit of desire to go, to get a ticket and go and, like,
just support.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I know they've lost eight in a row, but, like, just go support them.
This is probably going to be your best chance to see Reading FC win this season.
If they can pull it out on Wednesday, you know, the mood is going to change dramatically, you'd hope. And, you know, it's I'm not there to, you know, fan shame anybody for not going, but yeah, certainly if you. If you can get there on Wednesday, I really urge you to try and get down there and get to Peterborough. And just,
I think the numbers do make a difference. Crossed, they really do.
Fingers crossed that, you know, the support might just drag them over the line. We'll be back after the Peterborough game on Thursday with a podcast reviewing it. Fingers crossed for a win, because honestly, this podcast is becoming very deja vu. It's surprising that if you've managed to get to the end of this one again, congrats, because losing eight in a row is very difficult to talk about, and I'm sure it's very difficult to listen to. Thank you, Matt and Mika, for joining me today. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you all very soon. Cheers.